What is something that you've learned in the 15 years that you didn't know stepping into this space about being a leader, being an entrepreneur, running your own business?
Something that I knew but is constantly confirmed is people want to be heard. That is human nature. And when you're leading, that is the most important thing you can do. It's not about saying yes necessarily to everything. It's about making people understand that they've been heard.
Welcome, Third Rock listeners, to the Branding Laboratory. I'm your host, Devo, Chief Experience Officer for the Brand Storyteller and the Fusion Creative Brands. And each week, I have the privilege of speaking with extraordinary leaders and entrepreneurs who are reshaping the way industries work. These conversations go way beyond the surface to explore the core philosophies, the lessons, and the challenges that define the brands that we admire today. And one of the greatest rewards of this podcast is the opportunity to share the insights of some of the brightest minds in business, people who are passionate about pushing boundaries and redefining what's possible. And as I always say, the stories we tell are the brands we build. And this show is a testament to the power of that concept. Let's dive in. When this is all said and done, and you're sitting at the pearly gates or wherever you are, and somebody asks you, what was the difference you hope you've made while you were here doing what you were doing? What would you want them to say? What would you say?
I would want them to understand that I'm a person that likes to connect others, that likes to unite people in different areas of my life. I'm a real people person, I'm a peace in the Middle East kind of guy, where I think there is a way for people to collaborate together and work together and be together on this planet happily. So that's sort of what keeps me. That's how I run my business, both internally and externally.
So going back to your business itself, and you had to answer the same question, but only about your business and the problem that you solved for your clients. You've been doing this for 30 years, right? 30 plus years. Your creative lens has evolved over time, but there's something essentially at the core of who you are, Dan Fisher, and the problems that you solve when you speak to clients or work with clients. So if you had to answer that same question, what is that problem that you're solving?
I'm a communicator. I tell people's story. It's surprising to me how many people who are very smart and very talented do not know how to communicate their vision. And so that's what I've been doing. I did it, from day one when I was on set. I did it as an editor for many years. And now in this capacity, really understanding what the message is and what the goals are, and finding a way to communicate that simply and effectively.
When you first built, and your company's called Bottle Rocket Media, is that correct? When you first built Bottle Rocket Media and you sort of built it into a brand that now kind of coexists in as its own ecosystem, were there very specific values or beliefs that you were building this around?
Transparently, I think I learned what those are on the journey. I think I've always been fascinated by people and their story, and I'll use a buzzword that's overused, authentic storytelling, but that's always been a driver for me. I had values. I don't know if on day one I would have been able to articulate them, as I was just, as most people do in at the beginning stages, just hustling, I had a camera. I just finished a long tenure at the Oprah Winfrey Show, and I needed to find a way to keep my lifestyle going. So there was not a huge emphasis on values as much as doing the work.
And today that's changed.
Yes, today that has changed in that I'm considerate of who I'm working with more than I was 15 years ago when this company started. It matters to me, and the results matter to me, and who sees them and how it affects the world.
So, in terms of who you are today as an entrepreneur, that's owned a company for over 30 years doing the doing what you love best. If you had to sort of quarantine what your values are centered around running your business today, what does that look like? What are the things that you believe in?
I believe in transparency. I believe in honesty, which is more or less the same thing. I
Is it?
believe, well, you can't be transparent and dishonest. Perhaps you can be honest and not transparent.
That sort of help run your business.
Kindness is at the center. Again, like I really see myself and the company as an extension of me as a facilitator, right? We happen to work in the medium of video primarily and digital marketing secondarily. But, if I knew how to paint, I would be doing the same thing. If I was a writer, in a traditional sense, I would be doing the same thing. And that really is working with people to communicate, and that's why suddenly, probably, a third of the way through this endeavor, I realize it really does matter who you're working with, because when you're communicating their message, you can't take yourself out of that equation.
If you had your own show, you could serve as a facilitator for multiple guests at the same time in a conversation where you're kind of operating that space where your visual storytelling, creative entrepreneurship, leadership, and these sort of high performance teams and facilitate conversations between whether people who are deeply polarized on a position or people who are in alignment. But that might be a fun show to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would be involved with any show that has honest conversation, and I'm not a political person by nature, so I'm not doing that. You know what I mean? But ideas that have made it onto a list that keep coming back just involve being open and honest. And probably the reason I haven't done some of them is because I don't feel like exposing myself completely to the world. And I think in a way you kind of have to do that. If you want other people to do that, you have to be able to get in the water yourself.
Well, you're being honest, but not transparent.
Right. Exactly.
So you said a few minutes ago who sort of like the core of who you are. If you stripped away your titles, you're a producer, you're a director, you're an Emmy winner. What'd you win an Emmy for?
Editing the Oprah Winfrey Show.
How would you describe who you are as a human behind everything?
I am someone who has been lucky enough to find himself working hard at something that he really enjoys. And so I work hard. I have surrounded myself by a supportive group of people. So I play hard. I have learned over the years to put my New York ego on a shelf and really have an open mind and embrace others in their similarities and differences. I mean, in a word, I love people. In a word, I love conversation. I love hearing their story and then telling it to whomever wants to listen to it, because that's been sort of my de facto role. I shy early on, so learned how to listen and avoid speaking, and then develop these skills of hearing people when they talk. And I just love story, and I love people, and I love the human condition. I don't know if that really said in a word or said who I am, but that's how I define myself.
Why do so many people fail at, you said, working hard, but doing something I love that I'm passionate about? And it's kind of crazy how many people I encounter on a regular basis. And just yesterday, I was at a networking event, and I don't know, there were 40 or 50 people there. I probably ended up meeting at least 15 of them in somewhat relevant conversation. I'm not going to say meaningful, but relevant. And I would say more than 75% of them hate their life.
Yeah.
Why do people find it so difficult to step into something that they're willing to put their entire life behind and still be inspired by it, still love doing it, and instead relegate themselves to living these like diaspora vapid existence? I never
Yeah.
understood it.
Well, one thing I left off the list about me is I'm very, very comfortable with risk. I'm not risk averse. And to answer your question, that's why.
You think?
Right?
Fear or risk, are they the same thing?
I don't know if they're the same thing. I had to think about that. But people, you know, I think it's almost in our DNA to not travel or to not step out of the box or to not leave home. And that's just never been the way I operate. So, you know, as soon as I could, I moved from the East Coast to the West Coast. When it made sense, I moved to the Midwest. You know, like, happy to live in different places, found friends wherever I went, didn't lose touch with my old friends. You know, like I think people are conditioned to follow a path, whether that's a career path or it's a family path. And they don't, you know, see that we have this, you know, cliche as it might be, this isn't a dress rehearsal. So why not take the chance? Why not, you know, try something different and try something new? And I think that's how I wound up where I am. You know, I moved to California after college with a whole bunch of people that wanted to be, you know, the next best director, the next best fill in the blank. And I just wanted to be part of the machine. So I just wanted to have the experience of moving, starting in an industry, seeing what the other side of the country looked like, et cetera, et cetera.
Were you always, as a kid, you were into film, you were into photography, into sort of visual arts, always?
Always into visual arts, mostly photography.
Uh-huh.
My father was in advertising and he was a big into visual arts. So I grew up going to museums. And so just caught a taste for it early on. And in fact, I thought photography was my path. And then on the eve of my 18th birthday, I was invited to a film set by a film student and just fell in love with the medium. And so I might not have taken pictures for 6 years or 8 years or whatever, just because I was so involved in motion picture.
On a sidebar, I just saw Ansel Adams is set up here in Charlotte doing a whole photographic thing at the local museum here. If we go check that out, I'm here in Charlotte.
Yeah, you won't be disappointed.
Yeah, I've followed her work before. It's amazing stuff she does.
It's weird now because we're so overexposed.
Literally.
Like, there's a relentless amount of imagery coming your way and stuff that I, you know, in my personal stuff that, you know, 10 people see that I would have thought was the most creative thing in the world. Now I'm like, oh, I saw that 8 times last week, you know? And so it's really, really hard to be impressed. And I'm constantly having this conversation. I've actually been having it for 30 years or even more so with my dad about the timing, right? Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Rothko painting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Like, some days I'm like, I can buy Rothko at IKEA now, you know? And what he did was important because of when he did it. That's the sort of conversation that I'm having a lot.
The timing thing is an interesting conversation. I think we should break that down a little bit. I don't disagree with that. I think there's some other variables that are going into it. We are over-consuming and over-delivering, overexposed is what you said. And it's impossible to sort of separate yourself in this sea of eyeballs of content that's just constantly throwing at us. And I think that, if I may, I sort of reverse engineered that. I don't necessarily look at social media or just this content creation in terms of trying to expose myself to a larger audience anymore. I used to think that was the game. I really focus on one person at a time. I know there's like one person, let's just pretend for a second, on my Instagram. I know there's at least one person that sends me a DM every single week. There's more than one. But I get a DM on something I put out on a regular basis, a comment. Same with LinkedIn now. And I started realizing that if I was trying to cater to all the people, and there's like 20,000 people that follow me on Instagram and LinkedIn, I don't even know how to see who follows you on LinkedIn. I still haven't figured that damn beast out. But I did realize that I'm not talking to everybody. I'm really only talking to one person. And I sort of created like this avatar in my mind's eye and what that person looks like, what they consume, what they want, what do they want to hear, what are the questions they're going to ask me. And every time I write something, I literally write to that person. And I don't really worry about that other stuff. And I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody, but it makes a lot of sense to me. And I've seen
It's kind of weird because when I detached myself from the whole idea of like, Jesus Christ, I got to compete with all these people telling the same story. I'm just going to like bombard social media and the airwaves with all this content. I pulled away from that and I was like, it completely reframed my mindset on how I.
Yeah. And, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter
Yeah.
because it allows you to keep producing, keep
Yeah.
creating, keep doing it,
Yeah.
right? I think a very common pitfall to what we do, being in the creative business, is overanalyzation. And when you surround yourself with critics, which is what we are, you can't help but be overly critical of yourself.
Sure.
And so the challenge is, and I've certainly struggled with it from time to time, is to not let it stop you from creating.
Yeah.
And in a world where we're constantly creating for others on someone else's behalf, it's really hard to step in the box and put yourself out there when you know it's just going to get ripped apart. Even by your favorite colleagues, your most supportive people, you want them to rip it apart because that's part of the process.
Yeah. The criticism itself is actually what
Yeah.
gets your algorithm bumped. It's
Yeah.
pretty silly. I like what you said, this analysis paralysis. It does sort of lead to an imposter syndrome because you start second guessing everything you do. Why me? Why would I show up? But it's interesting. You said you're risk aversive. I mean, that is sort of the solution for imposter syndrome, for analysis paralysis. It's just fuck it and just do it. Just put it out
Yeah.
there and
Yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
lands where it's going to land.
I struggle with that only because we have a very specific type of client that we work with at Bottle Rocket. And so, it leans corporate, commercial, more pop culture-y, and authentic, like I said. And so the stuff that I might do personally might be a little bit away from that. And so lately I've been trying to figure out how to weave my personal stuff, which is a little bit more experimental, back into the fold. And trying to decide whether I should just be like, fuck it, it doesn't matter, or it's not good for the brand, right? Because this company is my third child. You know what I mean? I love it. And I love everyone who works here, and we worked really hard to get to where we are. And so I really protect it as I would any
Yeah.
child.
No, I respect that. That's what I help entrepreneurs with is building out the personal brand so that it lands but still stays true to who you are as an individual. That's why I ask questions like values and beliefs. I like to understand who someone is.
Yeah.
It's really important to, I don't think a lot of people take the time to really analyze that question. And again, it's like an old Socratean question, but just sort of who am I? How do I show up in the world? How am I received or perceived? And how is that different from how I perceive myself? And sort of like, how do I close that gap? That's an interesting conversation. When you think about storytelling, and you have an advantage here, in my opinion, because of your background, because of your experience, and obviously because of your skill and your eye, your creative genius. When you work with businesses, and I want to hear who that business is, you said you sort of work with a very specific avatar. What do you think that most people who come to you initially are missing about the whole idea of the power of storytelling and the connection model that it brings?
I think it's surprising to me how many times I sit down with somebody and ask them similar questions that you're asking me, but ask them questions about their business and they don't have the answers.
100%.
You know, I believe, for a period I was the shoemaker with holes in his shoes. I also didn't know, couldn't answer those questions about my business. You know, values and core values and mission and goals and they just have an idea. Maybe they stumbled into it. Maybe they inherited it. Maybe, any number of things. And suddenly, their business is up and running, but they don't have a direction. They don't know what they're doing. You know what I mean? It's easy. It's surprisingly easy to do.
What's a common thing you see from people that you interact with or questions that you ask
Oh.
where people just still don't really understand the concept of storytelling itself and the power that it gives them to sort of deliver a more resonant message?
So professionally speaking, I think people just don't know who their audience is,
Yeah.
right? I think that's the big thing. And, immediately after that is they create for themselves, not for their audience. And the distinction is if you're an artist or an individual and you're like, fuck it, as we've said, I'm gonna do what I want, then that's your brand. But if your brand is bigger than that and has an audience, you really have to consider whom you're talking to. Like, and there's no shame in that either, right? There's no shame in in adjusting your message for your brand, as opposed to, you know, it's not selling out. It's not, you're being still being true to yourself, because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, which is communicating your value to the people that will actually listen to it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big one. I think, and this is coming from a guy who makes his living with video. I think people spend too much in the wrong direction.
You talked about that sweet spot between the message or the product or the service or whatever value it is that you're delivering and the client's perception, and you doing it for them or for yourself. So what is that sweet spot where you're still satisfying your spiritual requirements, but still adding value and delivering to the client's perception?
I don't think you work in a client service business to satisfy your own spirituality. So, and by that, I mean, I immerse myself in my clients. It's not what would Dan Fisher do, or even what would Bottle Rocket do. It's what's right for the client, and let's make that happen, right? But based on whom I work with, that satisfies that, you know, personal spiritual part.
It's sort of not being able to define who you get in bed with, type of thing.
Kind of, yeah. I run a business. I'm not in the business of turning people away.
Understood.
But there are brands and ideas, and especially in the political arena, that I just wouldn't work with, because they don't align with mm-hmm. my belief.
That is the answer for me. That's the sweet spot right there, to be truthful. Yeah. I own a photography agency as well, so I operate in the same landscape. I do primarily branding work and strategy and coaching now, but for 20 years I ran a very successful photography agency here in Charlotte. And I was always, you said something a few minutes ago, I was always sort of amazed at what makes an image emotionally resonant versus it just looking good. Because I would do the same thing. I would put out what I thought was just a phenomenal photo out there, and it just didn't get much of a reaction from people. And then something else just clicked on a different level with someone else. And I'm like, what yeah. was it about this photo that you really like? Because I just don't see that.
It's so subjective. And you know what? I'm sure you deal with this too. Now I get at least one, if not five, resumes a day.
From photographers?
Photographers, cinematographers, editors, whatever. And I look through them, and I see the work, and some of it's fantastic. And some of it is stuff where I think, oh, when I was a young photographer and I thought it was interesting, you know, this would have meant everything. And now I'm like, wow, it's just so subjective. None of this stuff resonates with me, right? It's technically perfect, but there's nothing to it. I think that's the gift. That's what makes a great photographer great. That's what makes, you know, fill in the blanks, a cinematographer, editor, where they can manipulate the image to a point where it steps off the page, it jumps off the screen. I don't even know for sure what that ingredient is. I know when I've done it really successfully, and I've known when I have failed at it, you know, but I couldn't say, if you just did X, Y, and Z, you would capture it. You know, it involves casting, it involves lighting, it involves, yeah. you know, of course, if you're doing scripted, anything with the script has, the script is the, you know, the almighty, right? And when we do documentary stuff, it who will be in front of the camera, who will be talking to me, you know, and all these little variables come together, and then if you're lucky and you do all of it right there, then you got to get over the hump of the client. You got to help them get out of their own way, you know, and they're not always wrong, but a lot of times they just don't see the bigger picture because they focus on, you know,
yeah.
It's a really hard equation to solve.
That is one of the reasons I got into coaching, is I had hired coaches myself. And for the first time, honestly, truthfully, in my trajectory of my business and personal and professional life, I suddenly was getting insights and accountability and sort of a different perspective than I had always brought to the table, because I was so close to it. And I just realized, I was asking myself a few years back, who the type of people in my life have made the biggest impact for me? And it always boiled down to coaches. I'm a lifelong athlete, so I played sports in college. And then, you know, for my professional life, having mentors and coaches in that space and how they were able to make that difference. And it's sort of similar to what you just said, because a lot of times the client is so close to something that they just can't see the big picture, or they're not privy to sort of your vision behind it or whatnot. So how do you bridge that gap of trust and alignment when you're working with clients so that they kind of know, hey man, this is Dan. Do what you do, Dan. Just take it and run. What's that bridge for you?
I mean, a lot of it we've actually already discussed. I really try and be transparent. The money will always come. And that's the big notion. And so I don't upsell, I don't oversell. I have a very small team and we're very considerate of what the goals are, and we just operate on that. And we lay it all out there and we tell them what we think. You know what I mean? And most of the time that works. Sometimes clients are a little bit skeptical. Sometimes we've missed the boat. You know what I mean? But really it's just being as open as you can be to hear what they're saying and then give a true, honest reaction and thoughtful ideas. And then, once we know what the goals are and what the message is, then I'm not worried about offending anybody. I'm not worried about doing the wrong thing. I will do anything to protect that idea. It's no longer about the client. It's no longer about who I'm working with. It is about what is the goal. And so if a client wants to, veer to the right, we talk about it on a regular basis here. It's our job to keep them on task and see it through to the original idea.
Who do you primarily do work with, and what type of work do you primarily do?
We mostly do work in the nonfiction space, which is to say documentaries, a lot of voiceover driven stuff, product stuff, marketing stuff. If a client is willing to put themselves out there and talk about ideas, that's a great client for me, right? We have a certain price point, and that's all semantics. But the clients that are always the most challenging to work with are the clients that before they hire me, they already know what they think they know what they want, and they've decided, and it's done. And I have some clients that, I've worked with agency clients. They show up with boards, they show up with scripts, they're all done, and we have a great time doing that. But even within that box, we are comfortable. We find a way to collaborate and challenge the idea and see if we can take it and elevate it or take it and move it slightly to the right or left, just once we learn the information. So it's not a brand or a type of client on paper. We have agency clients, we have a lot of client direct clients that have their own in-house marketing departments. But it's more like, do you want to have fun? Do you want to do the work? Do you want to like get it done? And that's ideal for me. That's not prob that's probably 50% if on a good day. The other is like, I've been lucky. I have a team that loves doing what they do as much as I do. And so the very, very first thing I say almost every time is like, we're here to make your life easier. It shouldn't be harder to make a video or to do an SEO campaign. Like, the point of working with me is to get elevated results, but also with ease, And so if you're gonna fight me the whole way because you challenge everything I do, then that's just a tough client to have. That is less than ideal, I guess one would say.
I'm getting a sense for how I would answer this question, but you work in a lot of high stakes environments, you're doing documentaries, you're on sets, you're working with your both your team internally and potentially other teams externally for the clients. If you had to sort of qualify what type of a leader you are, how do you show up in that capacity? How do you lead your team and at the same time lead other organizations' teams?
By example,
Are you a top-down kind of guy? Or are you more of like, let's collaborate and sort of figure this out together?
we're a very flat organization. Everybody gets their hands dirty, happily, and best idea wins, always.
You mentioned earlier about your ego and having to deal with that. Present company included, the ego's always been one of my biggest downfalls. It's so funny how that thing works.
Yes.
But in your creative collaborations, I imagine that you are working with egos, you are working with deadlines, and you're working with, you mentioned, different visions in this clash, and you're already knee deep into the project, and you certainly can't just walk away from it. Oh, I guess you can, but you wouldn't, I would imagine. How do you
Never.
sort of handle situations like that where it's just one roadblock after the next, egos, deadlines, vision misalignment, et cetera. How do you sort of step back from all that and manage that for a better outcome?
It's important to remember that we're being hired for a service. So, the same way I want to make someone's life easier, no one is hiring me so I fight with them or I argue with them. I push back and we'll do our thing. And if I feel like the team's made their case and the client still wants to go in a different direction, at the end of the day, like it is their project, it is their, butt on the line. As they present. When schedules and time allots, I will try and do an alternate version to show. You know what I mean? It, usually, what we're talking about mostly is in post-production, because all the collaboration and debates about what is being shot, if we're shooting something, that's resolved the second you say that's a wrap, right? We got it. It's shot. Whatever it is, right? And so there's a lot of mini conversations on set and in pre-production. Oh, what if we do it this way? What if we do it that way? And on set, my thinking is always it's quicker just to do two versions than to debate it, because then we can figure it out in post.
Are you typically directing, producing, filming, or all the above? Or do you take, because you are running the company now, do you have more of a backseat role, or are you still the visionary behind everything? What does that look like?
Definitely not a visionary. I really let the team go. I trust them, I'm on set, but much less than I used to be. So I'm more of an executive producer capacity, where I'm overseeing from afar. And actually, with that role, I have actually more time with the client, in particular when I'm on set, because I'm not doing the heavy lifting. So I'm there to ensure that the client is happy, to ensure that we're hitting their vision. But for us, like by the time we're on set, if we don't know exactly what we're getting, it's worrisome. So we try to be really buttoned up so that we're flexible enough to embrace the happy accidents or see something and run it down. But also there should If a client is questioning what's going on set, we've done something wrong.
What do you think is the biggest difference? I've had multiple hats in running my own businesses. I worked in the corporate world for almost 20 years before I stepped into this landscape. What do you think is the biggest difference between running a company and working for a company?
When you're working for a company, hopefully the ideal employee is aligned with the vision, and has pride in what they do. And does it to their fullest ability. Let's assume that that's baseline. When r running a company, you're the same way, but you're also worried about reputation of that company. Obviously, the day-to-day concerns of payroll and client base and all that stuff. But I think the big thing is, what does the company stand for? The reputation of the company. How will it be perceived next year and the year after? When you're working for the company, you're doing a really good job. And, in general, I hope you don't go home and worried if you have a job the next day. When you're running the business, you go home and you're like, well, I have a job the next day.
It is
Even
pretty,
after all these years, even after
yeah.
all these years, you think like that.
It really is kind of a mind fuck when you really step back and think about all the different variables that go into actually running a company, especially if you have a team. Not to, I'm excluding human resources, but just
Right.
all the different variables that have to be considered on a regular daily basis. And
Yes.
if you're not planned out, if you're not able to sort of look at the big picture of what this looks like or could look like, it's a recipe for disaster. And I learned that early on. I thought because I was a talented individual, I could just launch a business and start doing stuff. And I mean, I couldn't have been further from the truth, right? And so when you look back at your trajectory, and I think you've been doing this bottle rockets 11 years old, is that right?
15. Probably there's an old website somewhere that says 11.
So you've been doing this for 15 years. When you sort of look at the trajectory of where you were versus where you are and all the minutiae in between, would you say that there is sort of one underlying thing that has really kept you in the game through all this time?
We are relentless with it. We leave no stone unturned. I want to say we, I have a business partner sitting over there. We talk constantly. We dissect everything, go over the numbers on a regular basis, assess the team on a regular basis, really, really, really continue to look under the hood every day to make sure that that we're doing it to the best of our ability and that it's making sense. Like client service for us is paramount to everything. Sometimes even more than the product itself, which I know sounds crazy. In particular, as we've grown and I've less of, I'm in the trenches a little bit less. Client service, I think, is one of our strengths because we really do take the time to hear what they have to say. And I think that's helped a lot in terms of, this referral, repeat business, and on and on and on, right? Like every time somebody leaves a job for us, we get a new client.
What is something that you've learned in the 15 years that you didn't know stepping into this space about being a leader, being an entrepreneur, running your own business?
Something that I knew, but is constantly confirmed is people want to be heard. That is human nature. And when you're leading, that is the most important thing you can do. It's not about saying yes necessarily to everything. It's about making people understand that they've been heard. It's probably on a personal level, the thing I worked on the most is listening. I thought I was a good listener. And it's at a different level when you're trying to inspire a team, lead a team, collaborate with a team, be creative. It requires a lot of listening, and as a result, everything I do is better because I'm able to take a deep breath, but also I'm able to be genuine in my response because I'm hearing what people are saying.
And listening is a subjective output, because for me, I'm very efficient in terms of how I operate things, and I'm like, this is get to the point already. But that's my listening style. And if someone's trying to tell me a story, like my daughter, for example, I probably don't want to go into it like, just get to the fucking point already. What's the bottom line here? Right? So I always have to, so it's very subjective, right? Listening is very subjective, because what's good for me may not be necessarily good for you. And I always have to remind myself around that. And it's kind of funny. I imagine as a listener, especially in the capacity of a creative and a leader and a CEO, you have a bunch of accolades. You have Emmys, your top production company. There was something else I saw, a Telly or some other award that you received. When you look at that and you think about how you've integrated some of those lessons that you've learned as a CEO, a leader, an entrepreneur, listening and being kind to people and being relentless and all those different things. When you think about the impact that you actually want to leave when this is all said and done, your work, the impact, not what problem do you solve, what's the impact when you're no longer here that you want your work to have left behind? What's that reputation around what you want left behind?
I don't know, actually. We're so busy doing the work. I haven't really had much thought into like legacy, which is how I hear that question. Like, what is the legacy?
Is that true? You've never thought about it?
You know what I thought about it? When I'm doing something that I don't believe in, and I'm like, oh, I hope this isn't my legacy. But in terms of proactive legacy, I think we're just stumbling into it now. I think we're really just getting started. I know we've been around for 15 years, but I would challenge anybody to say otherwise. The last 5 years have been completely fucked. And we are no exception to that. Since 2020, the roller coaster that has been running a business has been sometimes excruciating. And so I think we're better off for it, and we will be even more better off for it in the future. But I think we had a plan, and that plan was working, and that plan was going great. and every year was better than the previous. And in 2019, you know, this is not a unique story, I don't think. We had our best year yet, and then the pandemic happened, and we've been rebuilding since.
Yeah.
And so we've rebuilt a little bit to the left, we've rebuilt a little bit to the right, and we finally are at a place where I think we're just kind of getting started on our next chapter, which will be our most effective.
What did you do differently when you said you started over? What did you do differently?
Oh my God, everything. Literally everything. I was lucky enough to keep the team on during the pandemic. And then one by one, as we had to pivot, as we had to do business differently, the team either left or we needed them to leave. We just changed the way we do it. Well, first of all, on a sort of brass tacks level, our digital marketing arm came out of the pandemic. Mm. And it came out of the pandemic because up until 2020, we were 100% outbound sales. We did almost no inbound sales. And we started to do SEO. And SEO literally saved my company. And I don't say literally often. And so it did so well for us that we started to offer it to our clients because we couldn't. I became almost evangelical about it because I couldn't hold it in. Now we have a digital side of our company. So just, you know, nuts and bolts, like that's a big thing for us. And then I think we take it less seriously in the right way. You know, I'm happier to be in less control, or be, if is that, mm-hmm. did I say that right? Mm-hmm. Happy being control less. Because it works out, and the team has changed in certain areas a little bit here and there. And, you know, it's really amazing, like how you build on your experiences. And so, we're tighter than we've been in a long time. And that's just very different. Mm-hmm. We're like 10 people, 10 people full time, and probably another, you know, 3 to 5 freelance on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Like that's a pretty small team. So when you change one person, it changes a lot.
If you weren't doing what you're doing now, would you be doing something else? What would you be doing?
I'd probably be in HR.
Really?
Yeah. Or a poet. But poet's very similar to what I'm doing now. So probably be an HR person. And that's something I learned post starting this business.
What's a non-negotiable for you as it pertains to sort of like a creative ritual or a daily habit or just something that is just non-negotiable for you across the board?
Well, I'll say a non-negotiable, but it's not true because I break it all the time. But I don't like to film on Mondays.
Why is that?
Because nobody has their game on.
Yeah.
Everyone, like, you know, you can get 20 people in a room on a Monday morning and they're all like not happy they're there.
I wonder if the corporate work week is ever going to shift in America.
I would go to 4-day week.
I would do that the same for school too.
I think I could pull it off with my clients. Mm-hmm. But I took a small survey and the team doesn't want it because it would have to be 4 10-hour days, and people with children, they don't want to do it.
That's crazy. What's the best way that people can connect with you if they want to get in touch with you?
My website, bottlerocketmedia.net. I'm on bottlerocketmedia 312 is Instagram, and bottlerocketmedia Facebook. My personal Instagram is livelyfisher. You can reach me through the website. Easy.
And we'll put that all in the show notes as well. If there's anybody, for those that are listening to this podcast, when I republish it, is there anything specifically that you would like to leave them with that centers around the ability to tell their story and why they should figure out a way to do that?
It involves looking in the mirror and doing some really, thoughtful, understanding of who you are and what your message is. And if you can have a conversation with 1 to 6 people that really support you and will be honest with you and tell you when it makes sense and when it doesn't, then you'll be successful.
I had this conversation with somebody in that same group that I was telling you about earlier, and he wanted to know how I was marketing my business, how I was connecting with people. And I said, truthfully, the most effective way for me to generate business for myself is I make it a goal to, and I don't always hit it, but I have 100 conversations a month. And it's really just simple as that. I try to have genuine, real conversations with people on the podcast, on LinkedIn, DMs. I'm gonna go meet somebody at 3 o'clock and just have a just no reason whatsoever met on LinkedIn. We're just gonna have a conversation. And I really stand behind that. It's been, especially in this age of digital everything where everyone's just sitting behind a screen all the time, just having real candid conversations with people and listening to what they're going through and being able to sort of offer insights or advice if they want it. But yeah, is there one thing, and I'm going to flip that question around to you before you go, is there one thing that you, if you could only do one thing for the rest of this time running your business, that would be the most impactful relationship, connections, revenue building machine mechanism lever, what would that be?
Well, I think you just said it. You got to show up. You know, showing up makes a difference.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, as our client base gets younger, like even they don't want to answer the phone.
It's crazy
But
to me.
if you can find a way to be in a room with somebody, I mean, it's still the best way to get a vibe, right? Because people work with people for a few reasons, but one of them is, are they comfortable around you? Do they enjoy your presence? And if you can get some, if you can get in a room with someone, I think that makes a big difference.
And if nothing else, it just gives you practice to be able to have
Well,
conversations with people, right?
right. And it's more fulfilling.
And
It
build
is more
confidence, and
fulfilling.
who knows where it's going to go? Like I never
Yes.
understand this whole thing. And people always like to call them crazy because I try to do all these meetings all the time with people. I'm like, dude, you have no idea what has resulted from these conversations. I have no idea where it's going to go, but the ripple of it, if I make a connection with Dan, who knows where that could go? You know, Dan and I could be doing a
Right.
collaboration down the road from a year from now. I have no
Yep.
idea, but I
Yep.
would have not been able to. And this is why I podcast. One of the reasons I podcast is just because being able to have a conversation, a meaningful conversation with somebody who's doing some cool shit somewhere else on the other part of the world that I don't know about. It's like, it's mind-blowing to me. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you hear like, I mean, I've heard my whole life, like, you know, business is done on the golf course. I don't play golf. But, you know, the point is, it's a rela everything is relationship
Sure
driven.
is.
Everything. Even if I'm trying to tell your story, it's to set up a relationship as maybe loose as it might be with your client base, with your audience. You know, like it's all relationship based. And so if you show up and you represent yourself authentically, you know, that's, you can't do more than that. And you'll win and they'll win and everyone, you know,
Well said.
will
Well said, Dan.
Thank you.
Last question in your press kit that you sent over to us, there was a talking point that you said you were well versed in addressing. It was three personal challenges that you have overcome to build your business. Real quickly, what are those three things?
Well, one of them is listening. You know, they all revolve around leadership. I mean, I, you know, on a professional level, let me put into context really quickly. I spent 10 years prior to opening Bottle Rocket, I spent 10 years in a dark room editing, right? And so the good news is, I was editing really robust content, stories for the Oprah Winfrey Show, feel good stuff, broad gene intervention, medical miracles, you know, adopting babies from China, like the whole spectrum of stuff. The bad news is I spent a lot of time alone. And so, you know, all three of them, you know, have to do with me putting myself out there, learning how to communicate. You know, it's amazing that you can communicate to millions of people, but you can't communicate to one person sitting in the room with you. Learning how to communicate, learning how to listen, you know, and putting my reservations or whatever shyness I had on the shelf and just putting myself out there.
Thank you for those, for sharing those. You just sort of have to start by starting whatever it is, right? Whether it's fear,
Yeah.
whether it's imposter
Yeah.
syndrome, which is kind of like you just have to get in the ring. It's the first
Yeah.
step towards doing anything
Yeah. Yeah.
because,
I mean,
yeah.
if you're creative, you're gonna make, you know, X number, 10, 12 bad films before you make a good one. If you're a writer, you know, you're gonna write poor drafts before you get to the right one. Like you have to just start, and it's no difference with a personal brand or a business, right? You're gonna have bad sales meetings and you're gonna say the wrong thing and you're gonna make mistakes. That's what we do, you know? So you just have to like not be so precious about everything.
Agreed. Thank you for the conversation, man. It's great to meet you.
Yeah.
I'd love
yeah,
to
you as
stay
well.
connected.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking
All
forward
right,
to
then.
it.
All right. Again, if you want to connect with Dan, all the show notes will have all of his accolades and his credentials and his 411. So just look wherever it is. I never even know on the screen where these are these today. But Dan, thanks for being here. Appreciate it on the Brand
Yeah.
Laboratory.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon.